నారాయణం నమస్కృత్య నరం చైవ నరోత్తమం దేవీం సరస్వతీం వ్యాసం తదో జయముదీరయ నస్తప్రయేస్వ భద్రేసు నిత్యం భాగవత సేవయా భగవతీ ఉత్తమ శ్లోకే భక్తిర్భవతి నైష్టికీ. రీడింగ్ ఫ్రమ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతం క్యాంటో 10 చాప్టర్ 56 టెక్స్ 23. ద్వంద్వాయుద్ధం సుత్తు మూలం ఉభయో విజిగిసతో ఆయుధాస్మద్రుమైర్ద్రోబ్బీ కవ్యార్థేశేనయోరివ ద్వంద్వయుద్ధం సుతు మూలం ఉభయో విజిగీసతః ఆయుధాస్మద్రుమైర్దోర్బీ కవ్యార్థేష్ణేయోరివ. ద ఫైట్ సుత్ మూలం వెరీ ఫ్యూరియస్ ఉభయో between the two of them, Vijigisato, who both were striving to win, either with weapons, ashma, stones, drumai, and trees, dorbihi, with the arms, kravya, carry on, arte, for the sake, senayo, between two hawks, eva, SF. Translation, please repeat. The two fought furiously in single combat.
The two fought furiously in single combat.
Each determined to win.
Each determined to win.
Contending against each other. With various weapons. And then with stones. Tree trunks. And finally they bare arms. They struggle like two hawks. Battling over a piece of flesh. There's no purport, so I'm going to the next verse. Asitat ashtavimshaham itaretara mustibihi vajra nispera parushai avishramam aharnisham. Translation. The fight went on without rest for 28 days. The two opponents striking each other with their fists, which fell like the cracking blows of lightning. Translation and purport by Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that the fight continued day and night without intermission. Om Jnana Timaranda Sanjana Anjana Salake Chakshurum Manitri Venkasmai Sri Guru Venam Namo Vispadaya Samstara Dodi Simidya Vadaya Swami Dami నమాచార్య పదాయ నగరాయ కృప పదాయ గౌరగదాంధాయ నగరగాంధాయ నమో ముష్పదాయ సంస్థాయ భూగులు శ్రీమద్ భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామి నిధినామే నమస్తే సరస్వతి గౌరవానికి నిర్విశేష శూన్యవాది వస్తే సతారణి జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యనంద శ్రీ వేద గణాదాసి సాయి గౌరవక్త వంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హర హరే హరే రామ 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 హరే కృష్ణ. వి ఆర్ నౌ ఇన్ ది Chapter 10, Chapter 56. Actually, when I was asked to speak, I looked at the webpage again and I saw it was 55 and it was all about Pradyumna. So I started writing in my workplace, I started writing a story about Pradyumna. Being Rukmini's son, I started writing a story about Rukmini and also Aniruddha, the son of Pradyumna. And when I got back last night, and I saw they have jumped one whole chapter from the history of Pradyumna and we have come to Shamantaka as well. So all my, and I came back late at night and I said, look, and she said, no, this is not the verse. I was already caught out last time, so I thought, oh my God, and I had to sit down and rethink and write the whole thing out. Anyway, I scribble whatever I can think and... So let us go back to the introduction. Introduction means we have to, somebody may be new here wondering what we are talking about. So basically here, this is about the Shamantaka jewel. The Shamantaka jewel was given by the sun god Surya to Satrajit, one king. And this king was wearing it and going past through Dwaraka. And the people were so, what is this, like another sun. There was something shining, dazzling. And Krishna was also very interested in the Shamantaka jewel. And he approached Satrajit as a Kshatriya and said, look, I like to have this, I'll give you whatever you want. But Satrajit refused and he got back. And that was the end of the story. And that was the end of the story. Now, what happened was, where is the story? Satrajit, yeah. When Krishna went to Satrajit and told him he wants a Shamantaka jewel, and he politely refused, and Krishna returned. Now, Satrajit's brother, Prasena, he took this Shamantaka jewel, and he wore it, and he went to the forest to do some hunting. On the way, he was killed by a lion. And the lion was wearing this jewel on his body, and was happily going around. And Jambavan, seeing this lion with this Shamantaka jewel, I said, what is this jewel doing on a lion's body? And he killed the lion and took the jewel and put it on him. Now, meanwhile, the king finds out that Prasanna doesn't come out and, you know, from the forest, and they found out that he's dead. And then the king knows somebody stole the Shamantaka jewel. And who is the first suspect? Lord Krishna. So Krishna was the suspect, and of course he's very angry with him. So what Krishna chose to do, he said, okay, I will, you know, find out who the real culprit is. And then he goes. And then he meets Jambavan, having this Shamantaka jewel. And he said, hey, this is not yours. And then they have a fight. That's what we are talking about. The fight now is between Lord Krishna and Jambavan. And it says that the fight went on for 28 days. Now, this is not a very long fight. Jambavan himself has witnessed longer fights. He has witnessed a fight that took place between Vishnu and Madhu and Kaitava demons for 1,000 years. He was a witness. The story of Madhu and Kaitava, you know, when Lord Vishnu came out, and then when he was there, not came out, he was there, and Brahma came out of Vishnu, that is, he comes out of the, a bud that comes out of the navel, and it grows and grows and grows, and finally there's a lotus flower, and on the flower is Brahma, and Brahma is wondering what to do. He looks at it this way. He climbs down through the lotus stem, trying to find out, what is this? Who am I? Where am I coming from? What is happening to me? That time there was no Hollywood and Bollywood to distract them. There was no sports, no politics. So he was only wondering, where do I come from? What's happening? And then he goes down and down the stem, but he knows his attempt is futile. He knew he's no point. So he goes back, and then he hears the sound, tapas. So, tapa, he hears that sound, tapa, and he sits down. And tapa means meditation, and he meditates. And he meditates, and Krishna actually comes to him. And it is said in the Bhagavatam, Krishna actually shakes hands with Brahma. Now many people find that this is a Western thing of shaking hands. But Krishna did that to Brahma and he said, shake hands, yeah, congratulations, you've done your job well, now I'll reveal everything to you. And he reveals everything. Now when he goes back to his slumber, goes back to his lying down on the garbhoshan or on the sheshnag, from his ears come out two demons, from each ear, one, Madhu and Kaitaba. And these guys, when they came out and in the water, and they were having some, initially they were having sport amongst themselves, then they said, who is this guy? And they said, no, we came out of that guy. Let's finish this fellow. Hey, but who is that fellow there? On the, you know, there seems to be a thing, and then Brahma, so let's go and disturb him. So they actually go and harass. See, the story of Madhu Kaitaba are different stories in different kalpas and Puranas, okay? So the main story will be the same. The details will be different. So we can't say, oh, what he said is not right, because it's happening in a different year. So what happens when Madhuketabha, they go and challenge Brahma. What are you doing? You're creating, you know, we want your Vedas. And they, in fact, they take the Vedas there. When they challenge him, what happens is, beads of fear is supposed to come. Brahma is supposed to have four heads, the front head. And this bead is supposed to go down his body into his loins. And out of that came this personality called Jambavan. Now this Jambavan, sometimes it is mentioned as a monkey, but generally it's called a bear. It's a bear-like. It's not. Charles Darwin be foaming from his mouth when we talk about this kind of things, that Brahma just from his sweat can come out a bear. He'll think these Hindus are crazy. Anyway, for us, we'll come to that later. Anyway, what happened was this Jambavan, because he was born of sweat, he is also known as Ambujatha. And he was the first creation in the universe. There was no time, he was the first at that time. So that's why there is no age for Jambavan. Jambavan doesn't have an age. Always they'll say, in common in Indian politics, they'll say, he is the Jambavan of politics, they will say. That is a, somebody who's long standing in politics, that he's our Jambavan. Now, what is so special about Jambavan? He's the only personality. Okay, before that, what did he see? Now, Jambavan comes out, and what happens? Madhukaitabha take the Vedas, all this, he took the Vedas and ran away, and Vishnu says, okay, I'll fight with them to retrieve the Vedas, and there's a big battle, and the battle is going for thousands of years, and Jambavan has got the seat, that is the box seat. He's there in the front row, and he's watching, come on, fight. Can you give it to him? And he's sharing Vishnu. Give a good fight. Like that. So it is said that thousands of years, and Vishnu said, oh, I'm tired, I want to take some rest. And then Madhukaitabha, what is happening to you? You're supposed to be all powerful, and what's happening to you? If you want some benediction, you ask me, I will give you. They said, we will give you. They say, you give. We will give you benediction. Ask for benediction. So Vishnu said, alright, I want benediction that I will kill you. Give me that benediction that I can kill you. Then he said, alright. They said, alright, you can kill us. But you must kill us not in water, because everything is water. So he said, you can't kill us in water. You can kill us anywhere else. And they thought, they thought like any asura, they were buying insurance for themselves. But the Lord very easily became a huge size. He just expanded and expanded. Of course, the asuras were also expanding. But he could expand faster and greater than the asuras and put them on his thighs. And some places it says they smashed. Some places it is said that he sent a Sudarshan and the heads were chopped off. Anyway, that's the story of Madhu and Kaitabha. And they say the Medha, the fat of Madhu and Kaitabha were floating, and that fat became Mother Earth. And that's why this earth is known as Medini. Anyway, now what happened was, now Jambavan saw the whole thing. He's in the front row and cheering, was happy. And when he saw this fight, he was very, very happy. So what we know about Jambavan is, was not only there before the rest, Brahma has not started creating. He was already there then. And the most important aspect, as we should know, is that in every one of the Lord's incarnations, Jambavan is present. So, but most importantly, you will find that Jambavan is described as an old person. Oh, in Ramayana, you see all the time, I know all this. That's the way they, if you see in dramas or whatever, they'll depict him as an old man, or old bear rather. That's how Jambavan is depicted. But is this true? And why is Jambavan so old? I mean, he's a special entity. You should be somebody. Now, the reason behind this, he was a very young person. He was a very young, youthful, handsome bear. He was a very attractive bear. And he was so powerful, they said he could travel at the speed of mind. I think of New York, I'm in New York. I think of Vrindavan, I'm in Vrindavan. That was we are talking about here. He's talking about three worlds. When he was youthful and fast from the first few avatars, that's Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Narasimha, he was still young. And then came Vamana. So all the time, and he's watching all this destruction of the, he's watching and he's all the time cheering. And then comes to Vamana, When Vamana sends Bali to the netherworld, he then says, oh, Jai, Jai, and he jumps for joy. And he is supposed to have circled the three worlds 18 times in 3 moments. He has gone 18 times round the three worlds. That was the speed of Jambavan. And while doing so, what he did, his toe, his nail, actually hit the mountain Mahameru, and the Mahameru mountain was cracked. And Mahameru said, what? Even Saptarishis, you know, they've got different planes of travel, like the Bhutas and all travel in the lower, and then higher, than, you know, it goes on like Gandharvas and Kimpurushas, Kinnaras, like different entities, and the highest is supposed to be Lord Shiva's. You know, it's like, we can't see this. It's all in a different thing. But they are supposed to have the regions of travel. And so, even the Saptarishis have got very high, you know, places to travel. And so, Mahameru, even the Saptarishis have so much of reverence for me. And this guy, you know, how could he do this to me? And he cursed him. Because of your youth and speed, you're doing all this, so I curse you to become old. And also, you will not be able to travel as fast as your mind does, which he used to do before. And after that, he become, after that, all the time, you will see Jambavan is an old man. Now, so sometimes, you know, when we are reading about these stories, like I said, this fight is going on 28 days of thousands of years, and, you know, the God himself says, I'm tired, I want to sleep. You know, this seems to be preposterous. In fact, I was reading about Pradyumna. In the story of Pradyumna, they capture the child, they throw into the ocean, and a fish swallows the baby, and the fish is caught and brought to the king's palace, and they cut open the baby. They cut open the fish, and out comes the baby, and people think, wait, what is this, you know? Are these for real? I mean, these guys are crazy. How can you believe such stories? This is impossible. I mean, you must be really something wrong with you to believe such stories, isn't it? If you read a standard version of all these Indologists, when they, you know, the so-called Indologists who studied our Shastras and when they wrote the books, for instance, Max Muller and gang, if you read some of their books, supposing you read Mahabharata has got 18 parvas, we know all that, you know, Drona parva, Shanti parva, Bhishma parva, and goes on to say, Svargarayana parva, like that it goes 18 parvas, but that book will not have 18. He'll have 19 parvas. What is this 19th chapter doing? And there you will say, defective teachings, gross exaggerations. And then they'll start, list one by one. How can this be? How can that be? When Abhimanyu, when the Pandavas were doing this 13 years of Bharata, you know, incognito, the last 1 year they were incognito, and they were staying with King Bharata, and then suddenly the day they finished the 13 years, they threw everything and they all came in and sat in the assembly of King Bharata. They were supposed to be his guests, but working for him. And they took honorable seats. They took all the Kshatriya seats where the kingly people sat. And Bharata was so angry. Hey, what are you doing? You are my cook. You are my dancer. And what are you doing sitting in this royal place? And then they say, we are Pandavas. They reveal that. And King Bharata was so happy and said, you must. And told Arjuna, you must marry my daughter. And Arjuna said, no, I will not marry her. But my son Abhimanyu will marry. And when Abhimanyu gets married, there is description about 1 million maiden girls being sent as dowry to the wedding, 1 billions of foot soldiers. And then this will, Max Muller will put his footnote. This is preposterous. 1 million people, and then 1 billion is unbelievable. They straight away write like that. Now, that's okay for Max Muller to write. But what happens? But I still like the Indologists writing some of our books. You know why? They only say we can't believe this. But if an Indian writes a book, that is terrible. And he will say, Ramayana, you see, Ramayana, Rama is Paramatma, Shiva, Jivatma. This connection between the two, and he will go on like that, which is so bad. And they will say 1 million soldiers or 1 million maids, oh, these are your sensual desires, and 1 billion, these are your, what do you call, karmic activities. They give their own interpretations. That is a Hindu. A Hindu means, he worships everybody, but he doesn't believe anybody. That is a typical definition. You come and see my altar. I got everybody there. And like what Prabhu said in the corner, there will be even Superman there. Why take a chance? Put Superman also there. Now maybe Spider-Man and everybody will come in. Now the point again, so why they say that? They say your geography, the false geography, like Jambavan, if he was the first inhabitant of Jambudvip, because he enacted Jambudvip or Jambunad as it is known, there are seven islands and one of this is Jambudvip. He is known as Jambavan. That's why he got his name Jambavan. Now here, they will say your geography is seven oceans, milk ocean, and you know all this description, salt ocean. They say this is crazy. Now, so they say your geography is bad, your astronomy is bad. Our astronomy is not bad. We still believe in nine planets. They have just demoted one planet. They said Pluto is no more planet. They brought down Pluto. They said only eight now. But the Vedas don't change. They remain. You accept, you don't accept. It is your business. You know, you don't accept. They don't change. Nobody is going to change. There'll be whatever is written. Whatever is written is written. That's it. This discussion will not change. The discussion between Krishna. Anyway, coming back. So that is one thing. And then the sanctity of cow. They just can't understand the holy cow. Hey, cow, you know, it's so nice to eat. These Indians are so stupid. Why are they doing it? And then, you know, it goes on like that. And even sati, of course. Sati is when the husband dies and the wife wants to give up her own life. But there are many instances. For instance, if you all know about Mirabai. Mirabai was a great devotee of Lord Krishna. And when the husband died and somebody suggested, what about sati? She said, no way. She just said, no way. I'm not going to do it. That's also there. And when actually in the story of Mirabai, when she goes to Vrindavan and she meets Jiva Goswami, and I hope it is Jiva Goswami, one of the Goswamis anyway, I think it's Jiva Goswami, and he says, I want to meet him. And he says, no, I'm not interested in meeting a Mataji. And then she gave him a lesson. I'm spirit soul. I'm not Mataji. I'm not a woman. And you should understand that better. How come you're not allowing me to see you? And then Jiva Goswami relented and then allowed her to come and see him. And they had transcendental discussions. So the point is, there is even, you will see, burning of the... Look at the fallacy. I mean, times will change. They don't understand. Burning of the dead. They say, these stupid people, how can they go and burn the dead? And they give evidence. In Rig Veda, there is burial. No, in the religious practice of... In the practice of the religion, burial is allowed. But the rule is cremation. Burial is an exception. But what they're trying to say is, it's a very silly thing to burn. Very silly thing to burn, and you must bury. But what's happening today? Even Christians are cremating. Even Christians are saying, take my ash and put all over the place, put into all the rivers all over the oceans, and they're doing that. The only people, and of course Buddhists and the rest follow suit, the only people who still don't burn are the Muslims. Now, that is creating a lot of problems when you burn. When you just keep on burying, there is no place to live. Then how to bury the dead? So now, I mean, this thing. And what will be shocking to Max Muller today will be, if he knew there are millions and millions of vegetarians all over the world, he'll be shocked. Now, why? And, you know, I'll give you a statement by Max Muller. Now, this is a very strong statement. There is found in Hinduism a silly, senseless and savage element. That's how he calls it. You know? And why is it? Even amongst the lowest tribes of Africa and America, we hardly find anything more hideous or revolting. He finds it very hideous and revolting. What is so revolting to him? Because, which he doesn't find in Africa and America. When he talks about Africa, he's talking about ancient Africa or the tribal Africa, where tribal people pray to the snake. In West Africa, they pray to the snake. And in North America, they're talking about the Indians in North America, the Native Indians. The Native Indians, they adore the bear and they put them on the totem pole and they worship them. So he says, even these fellows are not bad. Africans are not bad. The American Indians are not bad. These fellows in India, they are the worst. You know why? What is so revolting and hideous? It's because they consider excrement, stool, as sacred and purifying. That's his own. How can the cow dung be so sacred and purifying? These guys are crazy. That's his conclusion. Now, the other thing is, though Vedas say that the cow dung is, and the urine of the cow is very, what do you call, sacred, they also say that the mouth of the cow is the dirtiest. You know, so you must also understand, everything is not, they are very clear about so many things, only we don't understand. Of course, modern advancement, what they have done is, when they slaughter the cows, and they see so much of intestines and stomach, what to do with this? Alright, the cows need protein, so we'll make them into protein pellets. So they take the intestines and the stomach, make into protein pellets, and then they give it back to the cows. And then what do you get? Mad cow disease. Now mad cow disease is not only for them, it's also for us now. Now we are pretty very happy about the whole thing. All the cow needs is grass. Just give grass and then the whole problem is solved. Now this is when you try to interfere with nature and you get this kind of things. Now what irks me most is when Max Muller has done all this. You will see in India Max Muller Bhavan all over the place. And you'll find modern Indians, Brahmins, all flocking there to learn religion from Max Muller Institute. And what do? They get imported German wine to sip and it. I think, now, maybe this way, and maybe, all speculation. And you know what Prabhupada said about speculation. Anyway, now coming back to what is happening today, Richard Dawkins. Richard Dawkins is the father of modern atheism. Now, atheism is not new. Even in the ancient Vedic period, there was atheism. Charvaka was the greatest atheist. Beg, borrow, steal, get money, buy ghee, and enjoy yourself. That was the philosophy. Now, what happens is, Richard Dawkins, he's some professor in Oxford something. Now, what he has done is, he's championing atheism now. He's a very, very powerful orator. He's a child. Nobody can actually, the whole Christians and Muslims and all, he just looks at the Bible and says it's a waste of time. To say that 10,000 years ago, nothing existed is hogwash. You know, that's what they say, you know, three or 4,000 years ago and there was nothing. And he said, it's just unbelievable, you know, this is all just waste of time. Of course, he's not read the Vedic literature. But the point is, he is just totally, in fact, he's written a book known as God Delusion. The whole thing is a delusion. And in universities in America and UK, his lectures are well attended. You can even hear his lectures in YouTube. Richard Dawkins, and you can hear, he's very, very powerful, very smart and very quick. But this Richard Dawkins, his whole thing is based on Origin of Species, and which is written by Charles Darwin, who believes in theory of evolution. Now, what is the most important thing in his writing? He says faith, because I'm taking this because it's a very important statement he makes. Faith is one of the world's great evils because of religion. You know, people have faith on religion. So he said that is a great evil, and he says comparable to the smallpox. And which is difficult to, smallpox virus, and which is very difficult to eradicate. Of course, now they have eradicated it. It's wrong there. But eradicated the disease at least. No, he compares that to a smallpox virus. And his teachings are based on Charles Darwin's theories. Now, Charles Darwin, what he doesn't know is, Charles Darwin himself was a great believer. And there was another infection which changed Charles Darwin's life. That was when he had a favorite daughter. Now very few people know about this information. He had a favorite daughter known as Anne Darwin. This Anne Darwin was not, she was a fun-loving person and he was his favorite daughter. Now what happened, one day a strange infection hit her then. Now of course we know it as, then it's called enteric fever, now we know it as typhoid. At that time there was no treatment for typhoid. And when his daughter was hit by the disease and when the daughter died, and what happened, he was shaken, his faith was shaken. And So what happened was he was, he changed his whole concept of life. That the universe or the earth came by accident, survival of the fittest, and it's natural selection. Things happen naturally. And then there is no just, he came to the conclusion that there is no just or moral universe. No just or moral, because he rejected God. It is like the same thing that happened to this famous rabbi who wrote the book, when bad things happen to good people. So he comes to the conclusion that if bad things happen to you, and if you are good, then bad. This conclusion is, if you are good, then bad things will happen. That was his conclusion. Here, this fellow's conclusion was, since, my such a sweet daughter, and I believed in God, and she dies, and he's not doing anything about it, he's neither good nor powerful. If he's powerful, he should have stopped it. If he's good, then he should also have stopped it. He's not good, he's not powerful. So what is the use of a powerless and, ungood God? I'm using the word wrongly. So, now the point is, that is how he came to the conclusion. Now, he says that our faith is no good. But Darwin himself had faith. He had so much of faith in Charles Darwin. He had faith. Faith is something that we all have to have. Every step of your life, every step, every day, you go up a bus, you take a train, you have to have faith. Faith in the tram driver, faith in the, you want to fly to India, you have to have faith in, even if it's Indian Airlines, you have to have faith in Indian Airlines. You have to have faith. You have to have faith in the pilot, you have to, that they will take you and they'll, you have to have faith. How can you? You want to see a doctor? You have a faith. Your doctor, please help me. Or you see a lawyer. You see anybody. How can? A husband has to have faith in the wife. The wife has to have faith in the husband. And so, faith is something that we all live with. We have faith with the politician. We have faith with actors. Some of us are very faithful. Amitabh Bachchan and Aishwarya Rai, we keep close, watch what's happening, what is the latest. Now, politicians, sportsmen, the Indian team went for World Cup, and I was there in the hype, as if India was at war. That was how the whole, they hyped up so much, like they were all ready for battle and, like that. And they failed so miserably. And Indians were, they were burning their, torches. They put their figures there and they're burning them, their figures, and throwing chapels at their houses and attacking and, So what is happening? We have faith, but what is the problem? The problem is when we have disappointment. Now that is the problem. A husband has strong faith in the wife. The wife has faith in the husband, but the husband runs away with the neighbor's wife. And then of course, oh my God, then the whole thing. So, faith is something that we have to live with. Even Richard Dawkins had faith in marriage. He married for the first time, it didn't work out. He married for the second time, he had faith in marriage, it didn't work out. He married for the third time, he's married now for the third time, that is Richard Dawkins, hoping it'll work out. He himself has a lot of faith. He has faith in marriage. Now, let us listen to from the master, what the master has to say about faith. And who's our master? Lord Krishna himself. He has a whole chapter in Bhagavad Gita regarding faith. Shadatraya Vibhaga Yoga, chapter 17. He talks about the divisions of faith. He says the divisions of faith, there are three of them, according to the modes of nature, sattvas, rajas and tamas. And also according to this faith and according to the modes of nature, you have to perform sacrifice, austerity and charity. By doing that, understanding the three modes, performing sacrifice, austerity, charity, you're going in a higher and higher and higher position. You can understand more and more things. And that is the Lord's answer to this guy's faith. He talks about faith. And I would rather, or all of us would rather, be more comfortable with the Lord's explanation of faith than this guy's explanation of faith. Now, many stories are there. We have all heard stories about deities talking, deities doing this, deities drinking milk. Maybe 10, 15 years ago, there was Lord Ganesh drinking so much of milk. It was a universal phenomenon. It was not only doing in India. He was doing it in Canada. He was doing it in Malaysia. A lot of, you know, you won't believe in Malaysia, the people who were pouring milk were the Chinese. They were so thrilled. Oh, the Lord is drinking milk. And they went and bought milk. And I know, the supermarkets were, they ran out of milk. And they were wondering where this milk was going. And, you know, so they were, the only thing the Muslims were, you know, they have to, of course, you know, they didn't come in, they can't come in. But they were skeptical about the whole thing. Now, anyway, what I'm saying is this kind of pastimes are going all the time. And sometimes somebody, oh, these things are all happening. Historical times, this day, we heard about Sakshi Gopal, and we heard about how in Dwaraka, the deity walked all the way, went on a cart all the way with Bodhanath to Dakor and remained there. So all these things, we think, these things only happen historical times. Nowadays, it's all modern times, all these things won't happen. But that is not true. Even lately, there was some, I think last month, there are a deity, I don't know the name of the deity, Bimbaleshwar, some deity in Nepal, sweating profusely. Every time it's in the deity sweats, there's problem in the state. And this information, you will be surprised, as, you know, was highly published in the Middle Eastern countries. All the Middle Eastern papers, in the Arab countries, they published it. Deity in Nepal, sweating. That was a big news for them. Anyway, what happened? So nowadays we think like that these things don't happen. Let's come back to our founder Acharya. We know so many, of course, in the Vaishnava tradition, they don't write these things. They don't tell us. But sometimes while talking to somebody, they will leak out some inside information about Srila Prabhupada having so many pastimes. You know, like they say, like, this is there in the Lilamurtha, when he wanted to establish a temple in Juhu Beach, and he had this Sri Sri Radha Ras Bihari. And then he was talking to the deities. He said, don't go. He told them, don't go anywhere. You stay here. And I'll make a grand temple for you. There was so much of fight. But now you can see it's a big grand temple. Not only that, they've already, in fact, they've got what is known as heaven on earth next to the old building. They've got a huge, massive thing they have done. And of course, we believe that. He spoke to the deities and he fulfilled his. And they said, okay, we won't go. You want us to stay here? We'll remain here. You know, and that's the way it was. So, like that, in fact, there are so many stories about Srila Prabhupada himself telling so many things. There will be huge kirtan, and then he will say, did you see? The demigods were here. Devas were here. Lord Narada was that side, and Shiva was this side, and, you know, people, you know, they can't. There was a time when Prabhupada was there, and, you know, he was chuckling, you know, like that. And the devotees says, yes, Prabhupada, what's happening? And he said, oh, you want to know? I said, yes. I was just wrestling with Krishna and Balaram. And the devotees, you know, they didn't stop with them. Who won? I won. He said that. I won, he said. I mean, you know, it's unbelievable. Once a reporter asked him, you know, and asked him, because he's saying so many things about how government should run, how this will. So the reporter finally asked him, how do you know? This is the way to run things. How do you know? He said, Krishna tells me. That was his reply. So these are things that we have so many stories about. Then somebody might say, oh, these are, you know, only happening in India. Indians are very sentimental people. So they will imagine a lot of things. They'll tell you a lot of stories and all that. But I'll tell you a small story. That is nothing to do with Indian. This guy is Sir Thomas Munro. He was the collector. He was in Madras. He is, you know, those days, or even now the practice is, what happens is the deities are in the temple. People endow a lot of things. People give gifts. Rich people give money and gold, and the kings will give land, and even the villages they will give for the temple. The idea is that in future or forever, there will be endowment money coming in so that worship of the deities will go on. So now comes there was the Mughal period. When the Mughals came into India, they ransacked the temples. That's it. They'll break the deities, they'll steal the, you know, whatever. So many of these temples, they used to take the deities and run and hide in the wells and in the houses. And sometimes they'll forget it and they'll die. Because they won't tell anybody. Because they can't tell anybody, you see. And so, if that family dies, nobody will know. And then when an acharya comes that side, and then the Lord comes in the dream, oh look there, I'm feeling hungry and cold, and they'll go and dig, and then they take out the deity and they'll build it. All the stories go on. These are all deity pastimes. Se virkra mahima. Anyway, what happened was here, he went to, when the British came, that was the Mughals, when the British came, they will come and inspect, and their style was different. They said, all this belongs to the temple. He said, yeah. Who's the owner? Then they'll say Perumal. Perumal means Vishnu. Vishnu, who's that guy? Then they'll come, we'll show you, and they'll bring inside, and finally they'll show you. This stone is the owner of all this property. Hey, the government should be the owner. We will take care of the stone. No problem. We'll put one pujari there, we'll pay some money, okay, you take care. And all this property will go to the government. That is why sometimes, you know, people will say, why all the temples are gone? The temples are all at properties. They have been cheated of by governments. Now, what happens is, now we'll come to the next on the list. See, Mughals ruled, British ruled. Now who's ruling? Our people are ruling. They are the worst of the lot. You know why? They have endowment boards and all of that. They will put people who are in charge, and the chairman of the endowment board, people will be, it'll be like alcoholics and atheists. They don't believe in God. But it's a political position. I know you, you know me, okay, don't worry, I'll give you chairmanship, you keep quiet. Stay there and, you know, you'll get monthly pay. So it has come to that. And they are only, everything's vested interest. So the situation in India is, in fact, even worse with Indians ruling. Now, coming back to the story. Now, what happens is, sometimes the temples will appeal to the government, saying that, you know, this endowment is not enough. Can you give us back what you owed and all that? So one such appeal went from this particular temple. This is known as Mantralaya, and the temple is Raghavendra Swami. It is a samadhi that saint lived many years ago, a few hundred years earlier. And so they appealed to Sir Thomas Munro, please come and, you know, and give back this particular village which was ours. So one thing about the British, they will take everything very seriously. So he came, inspection. He came, he said, all right, I'm coming on such a day. So he came all the way from Madras, went to that place. And he dutifully removed the shoes. You know, it is a samadhi, so he removed the shoes. He went in to do his investigation. When he went in, there was nobody else. Everybody else was outside. They could hear voices. They could hear Thomas Munro speaking, but they couldn't hear the other person speaking. And Thomas Munro, after about 10-15 minutes, he came out. And he came out with yellow rice in his hands. He came out, and then they were wondering what. So I had a chat with the Swamiji. I spoke to the Swamiji, he said. And of course everybody is shocked. And he said, yes, this village will be given back to you. You don't have to worry about it. And he took the rice back and he told his cook, tonight's meal, I want to eat this rice. Now this whole episode is printed in the Madras Gazette. It is gazetted. This whole episode of he going to the temple and speaking and giving this endowment back to the temple. That is it. So that is there, but of course, still people might. If you just Google search and Madras Gazette or Raghavendra Swami, and then you will get this. Now, what is Raghavendra? I purposely took this Raghavendra Swami as an example, because there are so many examples of other people. Puri Jagannath temple also. In fact, many people say Puri Jagannath, the whites are not allowed, or, you know. That is not Indian law. That is also by a viceroy, I can't remember the name. But the story I have, he is the one who actually said, don't let these fellows in. They are a danger to your temple. It is a white man who made the law. Don't let these whites into the temple. Anyway, never mind. I'll tell you that story some other time. Now we come back to this story. Now, Raghavendra Swami is an expansion of Vyasaraya. Now, Vyasaraya is the 18th in the Bhagavad Gita. You have a list of, you know, the disciplic succession. In the 18th one is Vyasaraya, Vyasatirtha, and I'm sure Prabhu knows very much about Vyasatirtha and Vyasaraya. Now he was the 18th in the list. His disciple is Lakshmipadi, and Lakshmipadi's disciple is Madhavendra Puri, and Madhavendra Puri's disciple is Ishwara Puri. Now, not only Ishwara Puri, Lord Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Acharya were also disciples of Madhavendra Puri. Now, Ishwara Puri's disciple is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is 22nd in the list of incarnation. So that is our connection with Raghavendra. Raghavendra is supposed to be partial expansion of Vyasa. But who is Vyasatirtha? Vyasatirtha is supposed to be an expansion of Prahlad. So that is also very interesting. So that's why this particular story, John Monroe, our Thomas Monroe in ISKCON, I'm connecting these two. Now coming to the story for the day. I mean, I like stories. And this story is one of my favorites, pertaining to what we were talking today. This is about Jagannath, one of the most exciting stories of Lord Jagannath. Now, one day, there was a king of Puri who received the Mahagala. You know, after the temple pujari, when things, they will send to the king and then he will take it and wear it. If you want to, like if you want to some Mahagalan here, then you'll have to get hold of all the pujaris and then give them some laddu or something and then they'll give you one garland. So whatever it is, what happened was this Mahagalan came to the king. So he took, he took it reverentially, he took the thing and then he put it on his forehead and he smelled, and you know, and then he put it on. But when he put it on, he found that he had a small mustache now. I'm exaggerating. There was a strand of long hair on his nose. I went, hey, what is this? He said, hair? Why did his hair come on Jagannath's garland? And then he looked closely and there was a lot of hair. So he told them, hey, come here, what is this? Why is hair on Jagannath's garland? So that guy said, I don't know, Maharaj. My job is only to bring from the temple to the palace. I don't know what happened. If you want to know more, you have to talk to the chief pujari. Of course I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask now. And then he goes to the, say to the temple. I say, what's the meaning of this? Chief pujari says, no, I'm, you know, we have a roster and the duty roster pujari, we must find out who the duty roster pujari is. And they went looking for the duty roster pujari and they saw this is the man. And they went to the duty roster person and he said, no, I already changed my duty. This is another person doing today. It is like when you go to a festival in Mayapur, they will tell you, you go and see Nareshwar, he will. You go to Nareshwar, you go to Jagannath, you go to Jananda, you go there, you go this way. You go to yellow block, main block and whatever, red, Garada Chakra, I don't know whether how many of you have experienced. Oh, it is terrible, you have to go all over the place. Anyway, like that, of course he is the king and he is not going to tolerate it for long. And finally they got the fellow. I mean, some of this, whatever I'm saying is exaggeration, just for a small laugh, okay. There is no roster there, okay. I just added all that. Anyway, he came and said, all right, what happened? Explain, why hair? As you all know, Jagannath is decorated with a huge turban, but there is no hair. Jagannath doesn't have hair. So this guy was first scared, I was very scared. This is a king, I can't play the fool. But I can't lie because it's also Jagannath's business. So he said, this hair is from Jagannath. What? How can hair come out from Jagannath? Come on, tell the truth. And he said, no, whatever you say, no, it is still Jagannath. Then they'll go, okay, who does dress Baladev today? They call that pujari. They asked, they call him. He said, okay, what is this? He says that there was hair in Jagannath. Did you see any hair on Jagannath? He said, no. How can hair? Come on, Maharaj, there's no hair. How can there be hair on Jagannath? So he was convinced this guy is too much. So he took him, okay, you come with me. He told everybody to go, close the doors. And then he took out his sword and put it on his, between his chin and his chest, somewhere near the neck. So he said, out with it, tell me the truth. Now you, if you don't, you know what I'm going to do to you. He said, whether you kill me or whether you do whatever, the truth is it is Jagannath's hair. So he said, you dirty scoundrel, you put the garland somewhere and somehow or other it got contaminated by hair. And instead of accepting, you're giving this tall story about Lord Jagannath having hair. And he gave him a tight slap. After the tight slap, he said, whether you kill me, beat me, still the story is the same. He catches hold of his chadar with the neck and drags him. Let's go now and check it out. And drags him to the temple room. And when they come to the temple room, there is Jagannath having long flowing curly hair coming out of the altar. And his king was shocked. Wait a minute, you know, and then he said, no, this must be a trick. So he goes to the altar, he climbs the altar because it's a big altar, climbs onto the altar and then checks whether it's false hair, real hair. And then he says, yeah, it's hair, real hair. And then he tugs it and he gives a gentle pull and the hair comes out with his hand. Beads of blood were seen at the spot where he pulled out the hair. You saw that. And at the same time you saw Jagannath's face, fingerprints on his face. The slap that he gave this particular pujari was seen on Jagannath's face. And what happened? He fainted. They called 911 immediately. You know, of course there was no, what is it, 911, 991, whatever they, there was none then. Anyway, the king fainted and then he was blabbering for a few days and it seems he had the hair in his hands. He never let go. He never leave. And he was blabbering, you know, oh wow, you know, like that for a few days. They say that hair is still kept in an ivory box in somewhere in Puri. In fact, they say a lot of treasures are in, under the temple. People are not allowed to go. There are so many blocks, you know, because... Anyway, coming back to the story. Now, what happened was, this pujari, that morning, he came to decorate. And then he saw, you know, he took out his dressing, he's all bald and, you know, no hair. What is this they call you? Shama Sundar Keshava. But there is no Kesh, and Kesh is living. So, say, so what is this, you know, you don't seem to, you know, what is this, you know, you, they say you are beautiful, you have long hair, but you got nothing. And while trying to look, suddenly so this flowing hair came out. Coming out, and then he was shocked, and he quickly dressed the lady, he paid obeisances, and when he paid obeisances and he got up, the long hair was gone. So he thought, oh my God. Anyway, he said, I will not reveal this to anybody. I will just hide this. No, I won't tell anybody. But then, Lord Jagannath did not want to hide it. He wanted to reveal it. So he made sure some hair to get stuck in the garland. And most importantly, it is said that he wanted to reveal the greatness of his devotee. So that's why he did that. Just as Krishna wanted to reveal the greatness of Arjuna, he gave him the whole thing. So, and then, that's how he caught. And then they say, like, what they say, like, he is the Patita Pavan, Jagannath. He is the friend of the fallen. And that's the story. So, in chapter 7 in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Naham Prakasa Sarvasya Yogamaya Samavataha. Which means, I am never manifest to the fools or unintelligence, or the foolish or unintelligent. I am never manifest them. By my internal potency, I keep myself covered. That's a lot of wish. If you say there's no God, yeah, there's no God. And he'll be screaming, I'm not here, I'm not here. That's God himself screaming. Who is the greatest atheist? Buddha himself. If Buddha himself comes and says, no, God is not there. Who can convince better than any atheist? Buddha himself. Read Buddha's arguments to say there's no God. It's unbelievable. Because he's God. He wants to satisfy everybody. Because, you know, children, his children are different. You know, some want to believe, some don't want to believe. So he makes everybody, I'm not there. I'm there. It's up to us, you know, this way, that way. So that is basically the story for today and the class for today. Thank you very much for patiently listening to me. And if there are any questions and comments, thank you. Oh, Hari Mamaji. No, not the Bible. I said, the rabbi, his name is Harold Kushner. He was a very devout believer in God. Okay? What happened was, he had a child whom they loved, both husband and wife. They're very devout Jewish people. And they had a child. The child was developed what is known as progeria, which you will understand, but people here might not understand. Progeria is a disease which you become very old when you're young. By 5 years, you're already 8 years old. You know what I mean? You, like that. So, because the child developed this progeria and died at the age of 5, so he was devastated. Why is this happening to me? Why is my child suffering like this? And then he said, I'm a good person, I'm a devout person, my wife is very devout, and this happened. So he said, oh, that means when you're good, bad things will happen. He came to that conclusion, and he wrote this book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, justifying that. And the book was a bestseller at that time, maybe 20, 25 years ago. It was a bestseller all over the world, especially in America. And of course, the Jewish people came after him. That's a wrong conclusion. It looks like God is punishing the wicked God is punishing the good and rewarding the wicked. That's not what the Bhagavad Gita says, you know. When he says, I will annihilate the miscreants and establish dharma, he says, dharma samsthapanarthaya and all that. Also, Krishna says, the doer of good does not come to grief. He tells Arjuna, you declare it. Because if I declare, I will change. But you declare then, you know, it remains. Because it's a promise to my devotee. My promise I will break. That's why he says, you declare that the thing has come. Yeah, you're shifting now. This is like the Christian belief that Satan is the one tempting and all that. But I'll tell you, Maya is not tempting. We like Maya. It is not that Maya is tempting us. We like Maya.
Yeah,
that's the reality.
She wants to make sure.
Well, she wants to make sure also that Maya also wants to make sure that we become devotees. She's also showing. Maya means three modes of material nature. You can see the three modes of nature, you know. If you have intelligence, you can understand, and then you can become a devotee of the Lord. It's all explained. Though, they say, as Maya Devi, she, the 14 worlds, 14 planetary systems, she's ruling with trident, telling you, you cannot go out of this world, because you're not qualified to live. You stay here. But then again, when you've taken the process of bhakti, devotion, whatever, and taken the process of loving devotional service, Krishna, and when you get out of the 14 planetary systems, he is the first one to be happy also. He's like a jailer. She's a jailer. In the jail, the jailer keeps you, you know, under strict rules. But if you have well behaved well and finally you're leaving, and the jailer will go, hey, good, you know, now don't come back. So that's the position. It is an easy thing to say that Maya is testing and all that. You know, it's all karma. You know, we have to understand that everything is because of us. We could have done so many things, this birth, not only, see, the whole idea is not one birth, you have to think. We can't think that there's only one birth. See, good, bad comes all the time. When good things come, then we think it is because of my good karma. When bad things happen, then we say, you know, something else is wrong. But we must also accept it. And it's not one life, you know, you have so many good things happening. And, you know, sometimes bad things also happen, you have to tolerate. And Krishna says, as you tolerate the as the heat and cold, as the seasons, you know, just like when it's raining, oh, it's raining, there's an umbrella, oh, it's very hot, okay, put on it, like that, you just have to tolerate. You can't say, you know, when good things happen, you don't have to stand on your head, and when bad things happen, you don't have to go and see a doctor and get antidepressive medicines. You don't have to do that. Anyway, that's a big topic, that is also very, you know, depends on how you look at life, but generally it's like that. You know, if you can understand in me. Otherwise, you won't know what is happening. So, Maya is doing a job. We have to understand. But Maya is not Satan. Maya is not occupying or trying to usurp the Lord's power. It's working. It's because we wanted it. In the first instance, we wanted. That's why in the material world. We wanted. Why not serve? What about me? Me, me, me. So, we are here. So, now you think about Krishna, Krishna, Krishna and get out. That's how it is. I can give more explanations, but I think. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.